questions.
Thanks very much for the questions.
Is that literally how take three begins?
Yes. How would you like it to begin?
No, it's just wow. We just, that's a boom.
Yeah. Well, it's...
Usually we go, hello, welcome to take three. Thanks for bringing them. But no, just straight in.
Hello and welcome to take three.
Yeah, no filler, all killer.
That's the one. Thank you very much, Steve, for the questions. Can I say, in general, shorter questions are better. So if you've sent in a question and it takes a page and a half of A4 closely typed writing to get your question out, it's not going to make it on.
So have you had a long one?
Yes, I have.
It's not made it through. Okay.
So how about this?
Because we got busy lives.
Chris in San Diego.
Okay.
What book should everyone read once in their life?
The Great Gatsby.
Now, you see, straightforward question, straightforward answer.
What would you say?
I was going to say, well, Mad Blood Stirring is...
Itch.
Itch. Itch. TikTok is out soon in paperback. But so Gatsby is good. The first book that came to mind, other than mind you, all of Mark's books are also available, and you should definitely pick one. If someone's going to pick just one of your books, what should they pick?
How does it feel? Because it is my favorite and my least well-selling book. It is the book that I love the most and has done the worst.
I was going to mention a book called My Name Is Asher Lev by Chaim Potok, which is an astonishing piece. It always kind of defies description, but about a tortured genius artist growing up in a traditional Orthodox Jewish family in New York, I think. Anyway, it's just fantastic, and everybody should read it once. Okay. But it's definitely not as famous as The Great
Gatsby. Well, the reason I say Gatsby is because famously when Hunter Thompson was blocked, what he would do is he would sit down and he would type out The Great Gatsby because he wanted to learn the rhythms of Fitzgerald's prose. He said it was like practicing the piano, and I love that phrase.
Carl Webster, dear Poppy and Crab, back in December of 22, during the Extra Take interview with Gary Oldman.
Yes.
Mr. Oldman, when discussing people sneering at his decision to direct Nil by Mouth, said something very strange, and here is the full quote.
Okay.
I couldn't get any money from England to make Nil by Mouth.
Yeah.
No one wanted to touch it. In fact, quite the reverse. People were saying to my manager, you know, this is career suicide. Don't let him do it. And the usual thing of, oh, he thinks he can direct now. You know, that kind of the poppy or the crab in the jar. You know, that thing. So, and that's the end of the quote. Yeah. My question to you is, especially Mark, who laughed along so heartily with the poppy and the crab in the jar, is what poppy, what crab, what jar? 6 months I've been puzzling over this. Hopefully you can shed some light.
It's two expressions, isn't it? The poppy is the tall poppy, you know, the tall poppy that gets cut down.
Tall poppy syndrome.
Tall poppy syndrome. So you cut the tall poppy down. But the crab in the jar, it's crab in the bucket, isn't it? That if you have a bucket of crabs, one of the crabs could climb out. But if they do, this is probably myth, you know, it's probably not scientifically true. But if one of them does, the others pull it back down again. And this is the thing about why if you have a jar of crabs, the crabs don't get out. Because if one starts to climb up and get out, the other ones pull it back down again. So it's a thing about everyone. If you are a tall poppy, you get cut down. If you are the crab in the jar trying to, you get pulled back down. So because he was saying, they also, oh, he thinks he can direct now, meaning don't get ideas above your station, sunshine.
Okay. So I think it was probably the fact that he
conflated two things. He said the poppy in the jar?
He says the poppy or the crab in the jar. Yeah. But when you run them together, it sounds like poppy, crabs,
poppy and crab
jars.
In the jar, yeah.
What is, I don't know
well,
that
I mean,
story.
I presume that's what he, and in context, that makes sense. Doesn't it? But I
hadn't heard the crab in the bucket thing, but now I've got it in my mind and it is the same as tall poppy. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Who does he think he is? Get back in
exactly,
your box,
get back,
Mr. Oldman.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, Carl, I hope that helped. Scott Thomas, before I start, this isn't a there's no good films anymore comment of the type Mark
good.
Quite rightly derides.
Okay, good.
I do wonder, though, are we in a bit of a lull in just the total number of movies out there to choose from? I'm generally a pretty active cinema goer. Love the experience of seeing a film on its theatrical release. However, so far in 2023, I've only done so 4 times and in total have seen 10 newish movies all year when you include those on streaming platforms. Are we seeing a trough in the volume of releases due to COVID? COVID's effect on the green lighting and production values only now being felt? The impact of this would obviously have something of a time lag due to the long gestation time of any individual project. It would be interesting to see if there are actually fewer films being released than have been the case in normal years.
No, I don't believe that's the case. The big problem usually is that films get made, but they can't get distributed. And there are, every time you look at the FDA list, every single week, there are 8 or 9 movies being released, 5, 6, 7 of which are new movies. So no, I don't think that's the case. I think that's self-selectingly anecdotal. No, I don't believe that we are. this week, for example, you know, we've had 2 new British movies. We've had Chevalier. Yeah, no, I don't think that's the case.
Okay, thank you. correspondence@comanomedia.com. Send your questions and schmesters for next week. Sandy in Cork.
Yes.
What is, without a doubt, the dumbest thing anyone has ever said to either of you in an interview? Okay.
Well, you go first because you're the interviewer.
That's the kind of question
the dumbest thing.
Not that we have said, because there's plenty of those.
Plenty of those.
So there are 2 things. One was for a newspaper interview when I was doing the breakfast show at Radio 1, which was at the time, you know, generally considered to be the biggest show on radio and is on at breakfast.
Yeah.
And I was being interviewed by a tabloid journalist who started his piece by saying...
Oh, this was something that somebody was interviewing you.
Yes, was interviewing me.
Fine.
So he's got his pen and paper and we're sitting in a cafe and he says, right, and he writes down my name. He says, right, when are you on? And I nearly walked out or punched him in the face, but didn't. You know you're doing an interview because I'm on, okay, that, it. It's on at that time. But the other thing that came to mind was...
Okay.
So I'm not going to name this book festival because in general book festivals are all great and anyone who's ever had a book... You know, people love going to book festivals. It's a great way to talk to other people who love the same kind of books that you do and to learn some stuff. And I was invited to go to one of these book festivals, which was run by a famous person. And I was being interviewed by the famous person. And it was... And I'm mentioning the book just because it is relevant. So the book was for Mad Blood Stirring, which is a book set in the early 19th century in Dartmoor Prison.
Based on a historical true event.
Yes, that's right. About the first black production of Shakespeare, which happened in Dartmoor Prison in 1814.
Remarkably.
So that's the kind of background to the story. So the opening question at this book festival, in this interview, in front of a decent crowd, you know, had gathered, this person said, now... This book, which I enjoyed, it feels to me like a 19th century version of 50 Shades of Grey.
And, what?
Well, exactly. That's exactly what that's in my head going, there is...
What?
There is... I haven't even got any way into this. I don't even... what? Are you sure? Have you read the right book? So at that point, I thought, okay, this is one of those interviews where I'm going to have to sort of take over. So I kind of then interviewed myself for the rest of that feature. But when Sandy and Cork asked that question, that is what first came to mind because it really has nothing to do with 50 Shades. 50 Shades of Grey has one image in people's mind. My book is not that. If you're going to buy it, don't buy it because you want lots of sadomasochistic sex, of which there is none.
So what's interesting is that in both of those cases, those are people interviewing you, okay? Mm-hmm. So I have 2 examples. One of them is the dumbest thing I ever said in an interview, which was, it's online, you can find it, it's very funny. I asked David Lynch at very great length whether the use of electricity arcing in his films, it seemed to me that this was to do with the synaptic passages and that somehow the way that electricity arcs, the question went on for a very, very long time. And I said, I know that you don't like to say exactly what your films are about, but it does seem to me that there is a real substance. Is there perfect pause? No. The genius of that being that I had asked David Lynch exactly the same question a few months earlier, and he gave me a great answer about transcendental meditation. And he knew what he was doing.
He was messing with you.
Yeah, he was. And the reason it's such a dumb question is that, I mean, it's lovely. I actually love that clip. People go, oh, you must be so embarrassed. But no, I'm really proud of that clip. I think it's a great moment because what it shows is how funny David Lynch is. I think the dumbest thing anyone has ever said to me in an interview is, you understand that the animation, that they're not actually moving. It's a series of still images create the impression. Yeah. I think that is the stupidest thing anyone has ever said to me in an interview.
Yeah.
And I think all subsequent...
I was present at the time.
You were present at the time, and it was, okay, well done. Okay. I'll just pick my brain up off the floor.
That interview is also available on YouTube. By the way, the whole thing, all of this is on YouTube. Yeah. You can watch it all on YouTube. Is Questions on YouTube? No. This one isn't, but take one is. No. I think it all should be.
Yeah. It was a dumb thing, wasn't it?
Well, I liked it, but thank you. That was a good question. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dan in Leeds. I think this is our last one. Dear Jack Sparrow and Hector Barbossa, firstly, I wanted to say thank you to you both and to the people who have kept the show going over the years, whoever they are. I first stumbled across the pod in 2008 when I was looking for something to accompany me on my newspaper round and was immediately hooked. How could I not be when Mark declared High School Musical 3 a better film than A Question of Sport in the first episode, which for new arrivals, that's Quantum of Solace.
Can I just say, I stand by that.
Yes. Okay. I was 13 then, and I have turned 28 today. This email came in a couple of weeks ago. So you have continued to accompany me for over half of my life. Most importantly, you've been there through my military career of 12 years,
wow,
which is coming to an end in a couple of months. I wanted to thank you for being a reassuring constant on my upteen commutes up and down the country between home and barracks, as well as on operational tours overseas when I've been away from family and friends. I'm sure I speak on behalf of all of us at the Armed Forces altar when I say thank you for
your
witness.
That's good. We haven't had that before.
We have.
No, did we? I'm sorry.
I think we have had members of...
At the Naval NAPE.
Yeah, we've had members of the... So medics who work for the Navy who've been treating Ebola. But I haven't heard of the Armed Forces altar.
No, that's very good.
But we would like to hear from anyone else who's also on the Armed Forces altar. As a birthday present, I was wondering if... Here's the question. If there was an update on the hotly anticipated Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl movie commentary, was it ever finished? Was Mark so scathing that it can't be released for public consumption? Or maybe he just ranted over the entire movie? I really enjoyed the first two commentaries that you did, and I would love it if this one was to come.
I believe, is it? Did we ever do it? Been waiting for the right moment for it to drop. I mean, we did. So what's happening in my head is that my producer, this is what happens on news programs. Just break it to you. There was a legal case.
There was.
That was unfolding.
And has now unfolded.
Has now unfolded. But we did it all. We recorded the whole thing.
What's interesting about it is that the legal case has unfolded. Full stop, new paragraph. I still watched the film with a different mind to the one that I had used when I'd watched it the first time round. Full stop. New paragraph. So when enough time has passed, and maybe enough time has passed.
Who can tell whether enough time has ever passed?
Maybe it won't. In which case, maybe it'll never get shown.
I don't know, yes.
It'll achieve mythical status.
There was a commentary that I did.
Could release a bootleg.
There was a commentary that I did for... If you get the Arrow video of Cruising or DVD of Cruising, it's me and William Friedkin. Okay, it's a very good commentary, and Friedkin is very, very good. That commentary exists because I recorded a previous commentary with me and two other people, because Friedkin said he didn't want to do a commentary. He didn't want to do a commentary, but he gave us his blessing. He said, "Do whatever you want. Do whatever you want." So me and two other people did a commentary for Cruising, and Friedkin hated it so much that he banned it. And then I did a commentary with him. But somewhere there is the commentary that we did originally, in which he took objection to some of the things that were said about Al Pacino's dancing.
Wow, that will achieve mythical status. The redactor was talking to me. What were you saying? Lord Redactor?
Oh, that would be great. For Last of Us.
Okay, so what the redactor is saying is that we might do a watch-along with episode 3 of The Last of Us with Eben Bolter.
With the cinematographer, yeah.
Who is the man responsible for the way it looked. That would be great, wouldn't it?
Fabulous.
We haven't done a watch-along with a television episode, but
no.
I've seen that episode 4 times already, so it would be nice to see it a fifth time.
It's very good. It's very, very good.
We should make the most of that.
We should.
Anyway, so stand by for further news. If you have a question, we love getting your questions. I think you can tell that in general, you know, I don't mind.
The short ones we love more.
A couple of paragraphs of setup is fine, but you do have to have a question or just a question, just a sentence.
It's always like the thing in when you if you ever hosted a Q&A, there's always that terrifying moment. We go, let's take some questions from the audience. Gentleman in the third from the back row with the blue jumper. The bloke gets up and goes, not really a question. It's more of a, and then you go, oh.
Yeah. Even if you've prefixed it by saying, no speeches, please, just a question.
And then what they used to do in political meetings, particularly hard left political meetings, point of order. Point of order meant everything has to stop while yay person speaketh forth.
So inspired by that, I'm sure you'll have some fantastic questions for next week. Send them to correspondence@kerbenamayo.com. Merci et au revoir.